Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. Today's episode is going to be pretty dynamic because today I'm going to be speaking with Craig Campobasso as we discuss alien races, extraordinary contact experiences, and the almanac that Craig created, which documents reported alien species, UFO hotspots, and real-life encounters. Dare to Dream podcast won 3 talk radio podcast change awards, the COV award for best podcast, Welt magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to, and it is high ranking on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Rumble as a video and as audio on any of your major podcast platforms. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane Heer and Access Consciousness. If you like to do some energy work, you can either take one of their classes or you can become a facilitator. Go to Dr. Dane Heer, HEER.com. It will be 18 years next month that I've been doing this show on radio and podcast. So we are going to figure out a way to all celebrate together. Put something in the comments below. Let me know what you'd like to see as a celebration so that we can do that with you and for you. What about a free starseed video and report? If you'd like to unlock your cosmic potential with a phenomenal video, report, an engaging exploration that investigates many star seeds and species in depth, you can learn your galactic origins, discover your star lineage and celestial ancestry now. You can go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed, and that's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. I have been interviewed now for a second time on Gaia TV with the legend George Norrie on his Beyond Belief show. Please check out my episode. In fact, check out the one from last year, too. Completely different conversations. And if you don't yet have a subscription to Gaia TV, let me gift you with one, a free 1-week subscription, and you can watch some of the greatest luminaries of our time speaking there. You'll love it. It's at debbiedashinger.com/Gaia, debbiedashinger.com/GAIA. And finally, I am doing offerings every month. Many of you have been attending them. I've done a new moon ceremony, a full moon ceremony, and upcoming, I'm going to be dedicating my time to you in June. And this is going to be an Aini Karpe, which is the third shamanic rite, the harmony rite, as well as a fire ceremony. And many of you know the fire ceremony is where you let go of what isn't serving you and you start to bring in and position yourself for spirit to bring you what it is you prefer. It's really powerful stuff. I'm getting tons of testimonies. Be sure to sign up on my website so you can be the first to get the newsletter, because this one's coming out soon. And every month, another ritual, another ceremony for you to heal. And now for the show. My guest today, Craig Campobasso, a multifaceted figure in the realm of ufology, known for his work as a casting director, award-winning filmmaker, and author. Craig's contributions have significantly shaped contemporary discussions on extraterrestrial life, contact experiences, and UFO phenomena. Craig has appeared on many radio shows, including Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. He's also been a guest on Gaia TV on many different shows, the History Channel, Deep Space, and Travel Channel's UFO Witness. His best-selling book, which we have here, The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, The Ultimate Guide to Greys, Reptilians, Hybrids, and Nordics, was made into a documentary that Craig wrote, produced, and directed. And his new book, The UFO Hotspot Compendium, all the places to visit before you die or are abducted is also with MUFON Books. And if you'd like to learn more about him, if you'd like to rent or buy his documentary or books, I'm going to have all the links down below in the show description. And with that, I welcome Craig Campobasso to Dare to Dream. It is so great to have you here. Welcome.
It's so good to be here. You're such a bright light.
Thank you. I had so much fun going to see your documentary, the one we just talked about, that your book, which I bought for my partner as soon as it came out, it was a gift. Yeah. And then you made it into a documentary. Not an easy feat.
No.
But it far surpassed any expectations that I had. So I want to congratulate you on that. And what are you hearing about the movie? Are you still doing screenings?
Well, I've been doing screenings. I'm going to be doing another one in Sedona in August. I just did one up in San Francisco at UFOCon as well. And that went really great. It's interesting because people don't know what to expect. I think they think it's going to be a regular talking head kind of boring documentary, which is definitely what I did not want to make. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to feel like it was very extraterrestrial in nature. I filmed people on green screens and I put them on sets and spaceships and different types of things so that we could feel all of that, interesting thing. And, it took us some time to figure out how we were going to weave it all together, but you just keep at it. It was 3 years of really hard work. 3 years.
Yeah, it was genius. I love that you took that approach. And I think for somebody, I don't know if this is appropriate to say I'm advanced in this subject, but I'm deep into this subject. What I really liked was that anybody from beginning to being deeply into this, it was very edifying. There was a lot that we received from it. And there were so many different points of view and ways you covered it. Right. So I'm going to urge people to rent or buy the documentary or go see one of the screenings. It's really worth it.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it was just such a labor of love. And I love all the people, who are in it. It's such a good, diverse group. It's not a lot of people in this are in your normal UFO videos. I pulled Chip Coffee from Paranormal, had him talk about the Mothman, and just interesting, fascinating stories. And, we have shown it before we ever screened it for anyone to people who knew nothing about this, just to get their reaction, thinking it would most likely be negative because they didn't understand it. And what they were is they were more. Mm. More and more questions to ask. And so that's the response we've gotten from, people who don't know anything about it.
Powerful, and I'm not surprised. So let's talk a little bit about you. So Craig, what inspired you to have this visible career in investigating and documenting extraterrestrial species for us?
Well, when I was 26, I concluded the very first casting job I had as a casting associate on Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories, which aired on NBC. And I say that's when my own Amazing Stories began, because it was right around the time of Star Wars and all of those types of things that were coming out. I was a kid that lived and was brought up in the San Fernando Valley, never thought about an extraterrestrial, never was not into science fiction. And then all of a sudden, one night, I have this major spiritual awakening, that continued for 2 years with three universal master teachers in dream state. Then I would visit after 2 months into where they were in my astral body. It was such a unique, different feeling. And by the way, I didn't even know what an astral body was. I just knew that I was there with them because I felt being there with them. And then in the last 2 months, which ended in 6 months, is then they would appear at the foot of my bed in their astral color bodies. And I always felt this immense unconditional love. I always was never afraid. I talked to it, you know, with some of my friends. I saw a very highly psychic metaphysical counselor whose first words out of her mouth were, "These beings that are coming to you at night are real, and you need to pay attention to what they're saying."
And what were they saying? What was their message or relationship with you?
Well, it's not that they said anything. It's what they were doing is they were waking me up to do something, which I kind of had a feeling about what it was. When my mother was pregnant, she said, "I always knew you came here to be a writer," right? So I thought maybe this is what I'm supposed to write about, right? Because Shirley MacLaine was writing all her books and all that. And as a matter of fact, I was friends with Shirley's daughter, and Shirley read the first draft of a book that I never published and actually gave me a lot of really wonderful advice. You know, God bless her. She's like 93 now. I think she just had a birthday. So really what it was after that initial 6 months, then I was back in their realm and they fed me this golden light that awakened all the cells in my body, which was waking me up to the cosmic community. And then I started astral traveling to other worlds. I started meeting other beings. I started telling my story about living on Earth in front of them. In my daily meditations, I would get this click at the back of my neck. It would go, that's a noise. And then boom, they'd be vibrating. And like, I'm looking at you is how I was looking at them on the inside of my eyelids. One of them who was extremely evolved appeared to me in his soul body around noon in the middle of broad daylight. And his body, I can't even say, it was wider than my arms. And it just moved in this gold light with prismatic ovals of gold, like different colors of gold in this prism going, right? And then it danced around my living room and then it went up in a portal because I had three portals in my apartment at that time. But that's the day that he came to me and he said to me in a while I was meditating, he said, "I want you to open your eyes and I want you to write this down." And I said, "Okay." And he gave me a metaphor. But I was so deep in this meditation. It's like when you're so deep that you see the actual dove in your mind, which means you have achieved the highest meditative state. And then I forgot it. And I begged him to come back. And he came back and he said, "The truth of the triangle is the power of the pyramid." And I opened my eyes to write it down. And then there he was of what I just explained to you. And so I wrote that down. And it means a whole lot. It means a lot, a lot, a lot. So after 2 years, and many, many more experiences, he said, I had written the book that I had given to Shirley to read. And I felt a sense of accomplishment. I went to Mount Shasta. I had an amazing experience with the I Am while I was there, where my soul body was split into male and female, and the I Am actually spoke to me, and I was hovering on the ceiling looking at my body down on the bed because it was a very high ceiling in this place I was staying in. And what was just so fascinating was when I returned home, I just felt so good about accomplishing writing a book, not being a writer. Mind you, it is not a very good book because I've recently found it and started reading and going, oh my God. But you have to start somewhere, right? And but what was great is it had, you know, everything there documented again and all of that. And one of the master teachers who is male, he said, now it's time to sit down and write the books that you came here to write. I want you to sit down. I want you to write and write and write until you can write no more. I don't want you to stop. I do not want you to edit. I want you to go until you cannot go anymore. So I am not kidding you, Debbie. That portal in my living room. So they started waking me up at 3 a.m. telling me that they had to do this hour when all the brain waves were asleep so that I could actually channel, which I didn't even know what channeling was, information that was coming through them. So they would come down through the portal and I would feel them behind me and my body would ring with chills for 15 minutes. Their vibration was so high and mine was still so low. And it took a long, you know, while to catch up to them through my own evolvement and through going through my own stuff and realizing how to correct everything, which I did. And so that was the process. So that was, they're called the Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga. The first book is called I Am Taran. This is the first book. There's four books right now in the series. They're on the website that you probably, yeah, he's
on the cover there.
Yeah, that's Taran.
Are these ascended masters? Are
oh God!
The, galactic, well, could they, are they galactic the, family? Are they just here to edify you and uplevel you, or is there a deeper galactic connection?
Well, there's a way deeper galactic connection. It all gets explained also in the book, but two of them. We're in Super Universe 7. They're in Super Universe 1 from the very first world that came out of the void. And so they call him an Eternal of Days, which means he governs one of the 1 billion worlds where all of the ascended and created beings are as you keep going up and up and up and up and up in paradise. So it was bringing that information forth, but I wasn't the only one that was seeing them. I have another friend who's a casting director and we went on a trip to Sedona and I actually had them painted by a friend of mine who does with the airbrush. So it's an amazing piece of artwork. And she said, I see them too. She goes, but I see them in silver capes and they're lined with different colors. And I said, yes, those are the initiates. So it's a world that's explained. It would take too long to go into it here, but a lot of it gets explained in book one. And Taran is a Pleiadian man who was actually born dualistic in a world, in a realm where everyone is fully conscious. So they explained in every 200,000 births, somebody is born dualistic, so that that dualistic person will have fully conscious people to bounce off of. And for fully conscious people who don't know how to interact with dualistic people, because we're so different. That's why this world is an enigma. And that's why there is so much focus on raising the consciousness here. And a lot of that through Tehran as well is he actually learns how to become fully conscious. He goes on a journey. So the reader goes on the journey and learns as well how to become fully conscious. And then he is ultimately made one of the senior professors at Melchizedek. And he teaches the star seeds that are coming into Earth. So you get to learn about that whole expanded program and raising of consciousness and all of those different types of things. But you also get to learn about their society, how it's set up, and all of those things. So,
and what about your other book? So we mentioned that in the beginning, the Extraterrestrial Species Almanac. Were there patterns, were there commonalities for the book that you noticed amongst the 82 species that you cataloged, especially regarding their intentions toward humanity?
Well, when I turned 26 as well, I became fascinated. So I started reading every book I could get my hand on with people who were having face-to-face contacts, right? I met a lot of these people throughout the years. I talked to people that also knew them. I started going on MUFON investigations. I started going on other investigations. I even caught an extraterrestrial on film in one of them and put it in the back of the ET Almanac book as well. And so really, my agent from way back when, my literary agent, brokered a deal between MUFON and Red Will Weiser Books for an imprint. And he called me up and he said, I have an idea for a book. I even have the title. He said, The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac. He goes, and you're the only one I know that could write this book because you know so much about these beings, right? So I used all of these face-to-face contacts, of course, with permission from the publishers or the authors or the actual contactees. And then I put it in the back of the book under further reading. That's really the bibliography. And tell you, if you want to learn more about those races, where you can go and get the books, even though they're out of print, right? So a lot of these races were from there. Other ones were, like with our mutual friend, Vivian Chavet, is, you know, she's an Arcturian hybrid. I mean, she's amazing in the information that she has. I have met many and been friends with many hybrids. Mm-hmm. In my day, some have passed. And we also have Jacqueline Smith, not the angel, but she is actually a mantis hybrid. And, you know, there's not a lot of information on the mantises, even in talking with, you know, Yvonne Smith, who's a dear friend who, you know, regresses people. They're just always sort of seen in the background overseeing things to make sure that they're done correctly. So,
yeah, I've had many clients who are hybrids. And
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to me and wonderful, frankly, to work with them. They are not like any pure, well, none of us are pure humans. We really are all galactic star seeds. But this is a different phenomenon to work with somebody who really is half human and half otherworldly, here for good purpose, here on purpose. And
yes.
I also had a client, Tony Gazi, who channels the praying mantis. And it is a fascinating energy that comes through, indigenous just to itself. Great healers, great scientists.
Yes.
So absolutely. If you, Craig, could ask a visiting extraterrestrial three questions on behalf of humanity, what would those questions be and why?
Well, I've asked all those questions. And I think the thing that's fascinating to me is that their technology is not technology. It's actually spiritual technology. And so they don't have scientists. They have what they call spiritualists, which mean they combine science and spirituality together because that's what makes the universe go round, right? So that's why when certain technologies get into hands of governments and things that should not have that technology, that's where things can go awry and those kinds of things. Like even when the first atomic bombs were going off, the Nordics were, one Nordic, Valiant Thor, who was lived and worked at the Pentagon for 3 years under the Eisenhower administration. Mm-hmm. Those are my posters back there from that. I made the short film and I'm making the feature film next. That's my next project. He talked about that when that happens, it not only sets the Earth a little bit off axis, but it goes out into a ripple effect and does the same with other planets. And even if it's a fraction off, it's not good. And it also goes through the rippling effects interdimensionally, right? Now, here's what's really cool. Is that there are actually spiritualists that work between the dimensional timelines. They work between the physical, the astral, and the celestial timeline. This is Neltha.
Hi, Neltha.
She is a clarion being. She's beautiful.
She's beautiful.
And she deals with astral biology and chronoastronomy, which means basically going between the dimensions. So she actually works between Clarion, Earth, Venus, and Mars. That's her sort. That's her territory. Clarions have been living and visiting Earth, especially in Italy, right? You saw Maurizio Cavallo. You know, we had to send a team into a little remote village. It was tough. But, you know, we got him and interviewed him for 2 days and I wrote out all the questions and, you know, he had Polaroids of all the beings and, you know, and his story is so much more. I mean, it's amazing what he says in the documentary, but I mean, I remember him first telling me, he said, Craig, I was so scared. He said, they looked human, but he was terrified for a long, long time because he didn't understand. He was just a simple man. And now he's not. Now he's quite evolved from knowing that.
Absolutely. Right? So, and even Whitley Strieber, you think about the arc of his incredible story for him, especially it's told in the book Communion, how terrified he was. These little beings coming in, taking him, abducting him, doing experiments. And it was traumatizing. And now, fast forward all these decades, and here he's in relation with them. They wake him up also, by the way, at 3 a.m. to meditate, to start getting downloads. And these are his family. He's in a beloved relationship with them. And so I think that's often the case, is that people, and that's not for all species, but the majority of species.
Right,
really,
that's correct.
Their intention is they're creating hybrids, they're getting information. There's a soul agreement that happened before people came in. And so they're not really here to terrorize, right? They're not here. And did you encounter any instances? Were there any instances where the beings that you described in the almanac that have made contact specifically because someone read about them in your book, almost like an energetic key or an invitation?
Well, I had categorized over 125 races, and they said I had to come in under 300 pages. And and they said, you know, they just wanted a thumbnail review with a photo, right? So I had to work with artists and things, you know, to do all of that as well. And I love Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Minister of Defense, because yes. he spoke publicly that he knows that they were visiting us for a very long time. And this goes way back into the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Even before he was the Minister of Defense. And at the time of his death, he said he knew of 82 races that were visiting Earth. And I said, let me see if I can honor him and squeeze 82 in. And I just did. I just squeezed 80. I could have put more in. I would like to do a book two. I would also, I've redone all the artwork as well, which is, you know, with now with AI and, you know, I work with this incredible artist. She did all the artwork in the documentary. And, you know, I would like to do a hardcover color book and revamp even book one and then take some races out and put some new ones in. But the publisher really doesn't want to do that at this point. So, but I'm open to that. I just think it would be very cool.
Yes, you are so right. In fact, when I moderate panels at Conscious Life Expo and I speak every year, and I did a Galactic Federation panel last year, and that's what I started out with, was Paul Hellyer. And, you know, I had some quotes, what he was talking about, having met and known the Galactic Federation and also the Israeli defense minister, same. He came out very publicly, put out a book. People didn't love it, you know, because they didn't want the truth to be out there. But yes, this is very important work that people in the public eye like this, entrusted with our safety, are starting to speak about. And so when you mention consciousness and dimensional capability of alien races, Craig, do you believe that any races are co-authoring reality with humanity from behind the veil? And if so, how?
In a positive or negative way, or
I'll leave that
both, or both. Okay. Yes, there are negative races that do have agendas. Mm-hmm. I have met with some of those abductees, and they're, now mind you, this is a percentage this small out of 100, right? There's not many of them, but they do exist, where they are terrified of the things that they have done to them. I'll give you one example. The Pascagoula incident, Calvin Parker. I included that in the UFO hotspot compendium, all the places to, you know, visit before you die or are abducted. And I talked to Cal. I've met Calvin several times before, but I called and I talked to him. And then I talked to his publisher. And I said, you know, Calvin, you've never said what she looked like, what this creature looked like. You've always called her a her. And he said, I will never describe her. Ooh. He said, she is so evil. She is so that she's been visiting him since he was a child. And I think he believed that if he were to do that, he would call her forth again, right? And, you know, his clothes and things were taken off inside of that examining room. And, you know, all that there were these weird-looking robots that carried him and the other guy in, and they were taken in just two separate rooms. And, you know, it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. Another abductee, a friend brought him to me just because they knew what they did. This was like way back, about 20 years ago. And the guy came, you know, when somebody has had the most traumatic experience of their life and they have that freaked out look every day, all day long, that's what this man had. And he said, look what they did to me. And he lifted his eyelids up And they put an apparatus around each eyeball going back. I could see the apparatus going around on the top and the bottom. He goes, "They're seeing everything I see, and it's freaking me out." That would freak me out. And he said, and I know if I were to go and get them surgically removed, they would just put them back.
Oh my God, I've never. Wow, that's a really wild story, and that's
That's
a
a wild story, and it's one that I saw with my own eyes. Right? And so, what I did is I gave him a lot of protection prayers and things of that sort. And, I never heard, from him again after that one day. But it's, I mean, there's just, there's so many different experiences, and I will say, because I'm a casting director, actors, both famous and some on television series, tell me their stories. And I will tell you a frightening one of a female who starred on a television show, very popular for many, many years, when her daughter was young. She lived out in Malibu. She had a big property, so she had a big front yard, and then there was a house over here, but it was far enough away but close enough. And she says she woke up in the middle of the night, she saw all these lights. She looked out, she saw this ship land. She ran into her daughter's room, and a gray had her daughter's arm and was pulling her through the wall. She said, "I grabbed my daughter's other arm," and she said, "and I fought that gray tooth and nail, and I said, 'You are not taking my daughter.'" And she said, "I literally commanded it to let her go, that they could not do this." Right?
And isn't
And
it true when people do that, when people say no, that's
right.
definitive, and then the extraterrestrial inherently will obey, if you will,
They
or
will. They will. And you know what? It let her go. And there was never another incident.
Oof.
Right? And I'll tell you one more because it just came to mind. An agent, right? Prominent agent, still an agent. Told me that he would wake up in the middle of the night and see grays in his room, but he would wake up and the gray, one gray would be right here on his face, like this, eyes on his eyes, like this far away. And I said, "Oh, they were going to do telepathic hypnosis on you to make you bend to their will. That's why it was right up in your face." And, anyway, so it freaked him out so much. So, you know what he did? He made sure after work that he had a lot of activities to do. He went and saw plays. He went out to dinner. He made sure he didn't get home till midnight so that when he would crash, he would not wake up until the allotted time in the morning.
God bless. Yeah.
And I have a picture of him when he told me that story, and the tears and the fear on his face still stays with me to this day.
I can imagine in the face of trauma, PTSD for somebody else, it's impossible to forget that and for that not to make some kind of an imprint. I am curious as you're telling these stories, Craig, after you worked with the masters, and I'm assuming they still weave in and out of your life, have you yourself had UFO experiences or other incidents in your life?
I definitely have had a lot of other instances. I've seen ships from afar. I've seen them, of course, through night vision binoculars. I went on the Chris Bledsoe is a friend of mine, and I went down with another friend of ours, and he took me along the Cape Fear River. He showed me where everything happened. He took me to the house they were living in because they left that house and left everything in it.
Will you tell
And
people that story a little bit if they don't know about Chris?
well, I'll tell the part first is, he was abducted And it was for many, many, many hours. He was fishing with friends and with his young son, Chris. They're all going to be at Contact in the Desert, him and the entire family.
Yes, I saw them.
Yeah.
On the agenda. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. And, you know, and in the beginning, you know, people poo-pooed him. MUFON poo-pooed him. I mean, you know, people did not believe his story. And, you know, so anyway, it was so much fun to go there and get a personal tour from him. And then he took me in the backyard, which was for us. And he said, Craig, when I came home with Chris Jr., all the rest of the family was gone. I pulled the truck in the back and we ran, started running into the house. You have to go up some steps to get into the house from the back. And he said, and they were walking out of the forest. So as we're standing in front of the forest and he's telling the story, it's dusk, right? I'm just snapping pictures with my Minolta camera, right? I don't look at them till the next morning when I wake up in bed on my Minolta camera. And lo and behold, I caught the extraterrestrial on camera. Its legs end where our knees are, little tiny legs, long torso, long arms, long thin neck, oval head, right? And it was holding a light source. You have the ET on that book, right?
Yes. Yep.
You'll look in the very back of the book. Mm-hmm. Of course, because it's printed on that paper, it's not going to be clear, but you get an idea. It's holding a light source. And the minute I saw that, I went, that it's interdimensional, right? And then, but I did not get a bad feeling. And I immediately felt it was from serpents. Right. It was like it was talking to me. So next day, our friend and Chris, I showed it to him and he goes, oh, my God. Yeah. So he sent it to a friend of his who's very high up in the government. And he said that they hadn't seen those beings since 1958. And they were wondering what they were doing here. I did not get a feeling that they were bad or anything like that. And Chris also does not, you know, attest to that from his experiences. But when we lightened the photo up, it was wearing goggles. And I went, oh my God, it's wearing interdimensional goggles like we use night vision goggles. And Chris said, that being would not have let you take its picture if he didn't want it. Because Chris has caught all kinds of stuff on camera that he has not really shared, right? He shared all kinds of anomalies and, you know, the tree that used to catch on fire where the lady would come out and talk. That's what I, you know, that to me fascinated me because not many people get visited by the lady throughout all the centuries. That's why I wanted to focus on the lady, you know, because it's more of a spiritual thing, you know, that gives people hope. And, you know, Chris is very kind. I know it's some mind-blowing stuff, but, you know.
It is, but I have to say, I love the fact that you just told a story that includes a camera, because I also have had experience really early on when I was opening up to this, just getting into this, doing contact work. And, you know, I was really green. But because I'm super creative, the one thing every time we took a break, like we'd be on sacred ground, sacred land that we were permitted to be on. And it was pitch black. You couldn't see anything. So my creative mind thought, oh, it'd be so beautiful to take photos with my iPhone and just hold real still without a flash and see what I capture. What does it look like? What is the desert like that out towards the mountains?
Right.
And here I was capturing without knowing, I was capturing evidence of UFOs in the sky. I captured a prism that not an orb, because it was a tiny orb in the bottom, a prism that was so huge, it encompassed an entire tree, its branches going up into the sky. And later on the channel, Wendy Kennedy said, oh, that was a species that was interested in you, Debbie. And so I think this camera thing is very important in situations yes. where it's either our brain and our consciousness or our eyes combined will not be able to perceive for whatever reason, but the innocence of a camera can capture all of it. And that's profound.
Yeah, it does. It sees into the other dimension, right? For some strange reason. I mean, on the Bradshaw Ranch, for instance, and that I have in the UFO hotspots, even after I came out with the book, you know, Skinwalker Ranch did a whole thing on Bradshaw Ranch, right? Nobody knew about Bradshaw Ranch, right? But I knew somebody that worked there back in the days when it was working. So I knew all the stories. And then I met Tom Dongo years ago, who is the ufologist there, who studied everything on that ranch for 4 years. But on that ranch, when they would hold up either a film camera or a lens, sometimes they were looking into another dimension. One time they saw dinosaurs.
Wow.
Another time they saw telephone poles, right? There's no telephone poles where Bradshaw Ranch is in a remote location. I would not spend the night there. It is frightening. You're like me. You have an extra sensory perception that is off the charts. When I was walking up there in the daylight, I could feel everything looking at me in all the dimensions. It was the most strangest feeling ever. Right. I have some friends that go and they live in Sedona. They go on the ranch almost every day. They document. You know what they catch a lot of?
What?
They catch the mantis beams
really?
On camera.
That's cool.
They do. Yeah. And they also catch still the Bigfoot, because there was a female Bigfoot who was albino that Linda Bradshaw called Big Girl. And Big Girl had a baby. Mm. And so she used to feed them, and they used to protect her mares from the grays who would steal the fetuses.
Wow. I concur with everything you're saying. You know, I had Thomas Winterton on the show last year or early this year, and he is one of the managers at Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh, and my God.
I just couldn't. But I mean, he's been through PTSD. He's been through serious physical injuries. There are things that occur there. You know, that was cursed land, right?
And there's a base. It's a base or a ship that's underneath that ground. I have known that before I even knew what Skinwalker Ranch was. When I heard the name, I was like, oh, there's a giant ship or there's a base underground. That's because, remember, they keep hitting metal.
Yeah.
Right.
Those people. I couldn't even do if they offer me a TV show. What? It wouldn't matter.
But Debbie, the thing is imagine what they can't say on the show.
That would be interesting.
That's a lot. I guarantee you. That's a lot.
That's a documentary right there.
Right there in itself.
Well, Craig, I'm curious. So if Earth is a living library or it's a cosmic meeting point,
right?
What role do you think that we play in the galactic ecosystem?
Well, I think, you know, it's what's beautiful is if you look at the first divine spark or cosmic spark or the primordial atom, everything sprang from that. And so we're all interconnected. We're all in those things here. We all know we have these soul groups, and we learn from some of them through traumatic experiences. We learn through love with others. And the one thing that I found is to get through each thing that we're set with in life, obstacles, with grace and dignity so you can pass through it quickly, go to the next tier, and just continue with your evolution so that your light can really help a lot of people. And you know that your light has helped a lot of people with your show throughout all of these years. And I get, you know, wonderful letters and things from people as well. And, you know, just saying how much the information helped them, because they were experiencing a lot of the same things. Mm. Right. And they didn't have anybody to talk to.
Yeah. It's really solace to have reference points and direction, people with information when you're coming mm-hmm. into all of this, either just out of curiosity or as an experiencer. It right. is so important, the work we do. Yes. Do you know that there are races, and do you know which ones, galactic races, who look at us humans as sacred rather than as just interesting or primitive? Who views us, if you know, as sacred?
Well, it's interesting, the like the grays and all of them, they kind of look at us as fodder, not to eat, but they kind of look at us like we're not evolved and it doesn't matter if we live or die. But then you have the races that are a part of the Galactic Consortium, which are from the Pleiades, from Lyra, from Vega, from Sirius, from Arcturus, from Andromeda, from a lot of these places where they're all human, because, you know, basically all the human races came from Lyra.
Right.
And they spread out. And then, you know, I think Dr. Frank Stranges, who was in contact with Valiant Thor for many years, said it to me. I said, why is there so many different colors of skin? He said, well, it was explained to me that it has to do with the light that's from going on in a planet that affects the pigmentation. I said, well, then what about on Earth? Yeah. Right. And he says, well, you know, they all came from different places and settled. And, you know, I mean, I look back and say, you know, a lot of these races, especially we know Syrians, would have come back in the times of Atlantis, Lemuria, all of that. I've been lucky enough to speak to an actual Lemurian. And that's where the information comes from in the documentary and the book. A friend of mine was very good friends with this person. And through the grace of God, she spoke to me and, you know, told me about it. She's not in the community. She's not, you know, anything like that. But, you know, but they're all different colors and races and things there, which is in Telos below Mount Shasta. And all of those, you know, all of those places are connected. My friend also was friends with Commander Anton, and he runs the Silver Fleet out of there and other areas that are near there. And lots of people have caught the Silver Fleet on camera as well, and have caught them in between going from visible to visible. I saw one of those pictures. That was amazing. And, but she also said that Anton and this woman decided to live as Earth people, as most of these ET races do who come from afar. They will come here and they will pick a place to live, and they will live as one of us for 2 to 3 to 5 years and ingratiate themselves into society. And because they're so evolved, they help the people around them to become evolved. So it's like, you know, when you meet somebody and you go, oh my God, I just love that person. They have the best energy. You know, I want to know more. You know, it would be something like that. Have I in my life seen those kind of people? Yes. And it's amazing to just feel, you know, to just feel that energy. Being around a created being is like your body would probably ring with chills for a half an hour.
Yeah.
Because their vibration's so high.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. I've had the experience. I know exactly what you are saying.
Yeah.
Outside of me, have you ever met a Lyran in person?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Really? Tell.
Well, the woman I told you about that the Gray tried to take her daughter. She knew she was from Lyra.
Powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I have such strong resonance. I mean, I know I've been other places, but that is so big for me. I don't know if you know Vashta Neruda, the artist. She's very
amazing.
Yes, I was able to commission her without telling her anything, but just to do my soul portrait, and it hangs in the house, and it's stunning. It is a lioness with a robe on, with something in her third eye, with sacred technology coming down her chest, and everything vibrates because her frequency is all about healing and communication. And it's just like breathtaking.
That's right. And have you found, in my experience, people who are waking up? And when I woke up, the Lyran lionesses, lions, cat felines were one of the first races that came to say hello.
Mm. Yeah, because they're so palatable, right?
Yeah.
They're so
palatable. They are. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, they do come to people that are open. Because you can talk about them in a way that's not going to be frightening for other people, since we've never seen one. You know, there's a case also in UFO hotspots of a 14-year-old Cherokee girl who was taken up on a ship. They knew that she was, or the reservation knew she was going to be taken because the ship kept hovering above. And this being was looked kind of like a lizard, and had these ears and all of this different stuff. I had a great rendering of what he looks like done for the book. And he put an apparatus on her head. And so they were able to communicate back and forth. And because she had no fear, and because she was 14, and she had this apparatus on, she was able to retain all the memories, and this being told her about who they are, where they're from, all of that. And then Colonel Wendell Stevens documented it in a book. And I can't remember the name of the book, but if you get UFO hotspots, it's in there with the Cherokee, with the 14-year-old Cherokee girl. So, but she said they actually also spoke with chirps and kind of whistling sounds, which I've heard some other races talk like that as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I love this story also because the indigenous have been visited by extraterrestrials since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
So there's nothing for them strange about it. They are used to it, and they have deep relation with the extraterrestrials. And I've often wondered this for the shamans themselves who leave this realm in order to access healing and information to bring back to individuals or to their tribe, if they were also having a connection with extraterrestrials when they leave this realm in order to get a lot of advanced information and bring it back. But this is some of what I talk about on Gaia TV, is all this intertwining of shamanism and ETs, and how fascinating it is, the hundreds of thousands of years this has been going on.
It's amazing. And it would depend on if that shaman was going to come back to Earth and do it again, or if they were going to then, usually you go back to Melchizedek, you work things out of what you want your next experience to be, what planet, how many years you think you're going to need to do it. That's why a lot of those races live, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, some live 10,000 years, you know, because they also have the technology to do that.
So. Yeah. What about your personal contact experience, Craig, has there ever been a transmission, a symbol, a piece of knowledge that you still don't understand, but you feel intuitively this is waiting for a future time to unlock?
Well, it's interesting. In the beginning, when I was receiving all the downloads, when I was writing, they would give me an image of a contact pill with all the little tiny, like, dots in it, you know?
Like a coat, you know, or something?
Like, sprinkles you put on your ice cream. Okay. Or candy. A contact pill is filled with those little kind of granules, right? And they said, what we're doing is we're putting it in, and as you evolve, it's being time released to match your evolvement so that it doesn't short circuit you.
Oh, that's great.
And I always loved that symbology and that kind of thing. I've been given symbols, but they will always tell me what it means. You know, Tehran, came to me and showed me an infinite healing symbol. And I drew it and I have it somewhere. Oh, I used to have it right up here, but, you just never know what you're going to get. You know, sometimes you'll just wake up in the middle of the night and just these wonderful things happen. And, you know, I get up and I write them all down, you know, because if you go back to sleep, it gets fuzzy in the morning. It's like a, you know, kind of like a dream, unless it's a lucid dream where you're there and then you come back here. Mm. And that means you're really awake when you wake up.
Can you tell people where can they find you and what's next? What's next? You've got a book. You've got baby volume two.
Well, I'm expanding the autobiography of an extraterrestrial saga from 4 volumes to 7 volumes. And I have written 2 of those volumes. And I'm doing all the artwork because I have them all illustrated. And I'm working on the final book now, the 7th book. And so I'll release all of those together as a package. So I'm avidly, you know, looking for an agent that can get it into one of the main big publishers so it could get out there in a big way. And then I'm working on gearing up to start making Stranger at the Pentagon, the feature film, which, you know, it's all ready to go. I've got the script written and, you know, I'm working on it. I've raised some money and now I'm just waiting. You know, I'm going to need to raise some more. So if there's any millionaires out there, call me. and then the website is autobiographyofunet.com, autobiographyofunet.com. And on the homepage is where all of the Tehran books are. Then if you click on other books, you'll see you can buy the documentary on DVD, the E.T. Almanac book, UFO Hotspot book. I have these wonderful cards that Michael came to me, Archangel Michael came to me. They're the Universal Seal of Protection. It's Michael, Melchizedek, and Metatron. And so I have those on there as well. And then a really fun book that I did a movie about 25 years ago called The Silence of the Hams with a zillion comedians from Mel Brooks to Phyllis Diller to Dom DeLuise. I mean, everybody and their mothers in this book. We did a 25th anniversary documentary. And then I did a picture book of everything on the set and told stories. So you can get that on the website as well. It's so fun.
Excellent. So I'll have the link for Vimeo in the show notes. That's where they can get your documentary, and then for your DVD, your books, it's autobiographyofunet.com. And Craig, this is Dare to Dream. Last question. What are you next here to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
Well, I really, well, my dream would be to get Stranger at the Pentagon off the ground and to find a big publisher and agent to get the book series out there. Because right now they're just self-published through Author House. They're on Amazon as well, but I would like them to get out there in a big way because they are packed with so much information that these beings brought forth.
Thank you
So,
for coming on the show today. I
thank
will see
you.
you next week. I can't wait. And I love the work you're doing. Keep going, keep going.
Thank you.
I end today's show with this quote: "Beyond the stars and within our DNA lies a cosmic heritage, one humanity is only beginning to remember. The beings we call extraterrestrials are not visitors. They are reflections, teachers, and keepers of truth waiting to be rediscovered. To know them is to better understand who we truly are. When we open our minds to the possibility that we are not alone, we begin to see ourselves not just as citizens of Earth, but as participants in a vast cosmic community. The journey to understanding extraterrestrial life is ultimately a journey to understanding ourselves, our potential, and the greater mysteries that unite all beings across the stars." Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger. Leave a comment, share. Thank you. I read them all. And next week on the podcast, Richard Lawrence will be here. He is the executive secretary of the Atheris Society for Europe. It's an organization that promotes the idea of a cosmic order and the belief in a forthcoming next master who will arrive in a flying saucer. And Richard was an avid student and now part of the Atheris Society and the founder, Dr. George King. This will be an amazing conversation. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today on Dare to Dream. Remember to turn all your dreams into your reality.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.